Good evening. James McKenna here with my Science Hour, May 18th, 2017. Many topics to cover tonight. Got an email from a listener, gentleman who had ordered some water filter products and listens to my paid cast on a regular basis. He said what his kids and him are doing, they are listening to the Cosmos series, my version of the Cosmos, and it's called Cosmos, The Real Story. I have I'm about halfway through that series right now. It will continue into July. Remember, $3.95 a month for the paid cast, probably one of the best bargains this side of the side of the universe. But he listens to the paid casts. First, he listens to the Carl Sagan version, and then he listens to mine. And so anyway, he said it was very interesting and did not understand the amount of misinformation or disinformation that Carl Sagan was putting out. And of course, Carl thought he was doing a good job, and so did 600 million other people. But once you get done listening to my review of Carl Sagan, and then you listen to what I have to say, let me tell you, it's going to put it into a whole different perspective. Many topics to cover tonight. This in from a listener. It was an email. And, you know, I don't have call-ins, but I get a lot of emails. So if you have questions, feel free to email me at one of the email addresses that you have. And on the webpage, there's an email address. We do look at that. It's called the Black Hole. And there's sometimes as many as 30,000 emails in there. But we do get to those. And if you have questions, be concise. But anyway, from a listener, he says, I'm confused about the mass of Hale-Bopp and how its mass could not be detected independently. He was reading my book, Comets, and I have a quote in there. It says, the nucleus of Hale-Bopp was big, about the size of our moon, and it held a companion. Now, that's the key to understanding this entire issue, and that is why NASA never let out any data, because anybody like myself who's adept at astronomy understands physics, understands this basic principle. In the world of gravity, if you have an object that is larger and you have something that's in orbit around it, in fact, you can do it even if they're about the same size. Typically, if you have one object that's quite a bit larger than the other one, and the other one, of course, is orbiting the smaller one, orbiting the larger one, you can make a very simple calculation based on the radius of the orbit and the period of the orbit. And so with that little bit of data, you can determine the central mass. Now, they've done this, for example, with Pluto. After they discovered Pluto in the 1930s, it wasn't until, I think, into the later 1970s that they discovered the moon Charon, the moon of Pluto. And as soon as that was discovered, they could measure the radius of the orbit, the distance from the planet Pluto to the moon Charon, and the period of the orbit. And like that, they knew that Pluto was small. And they really didn't know other before that. They really didn't have any way to estimate. But Hale-Bopp came in with a companion. And that's why the CIA was, that one of the reasons why the CIA was shutting that down. When it was first discovered in 1991 by the Harrington at the Naval Observatory, it had a companion. They could see the companion and measure the radius of the orbit and the period of the orbit. So they knew that this thing was probably many Earth size. They also had an estimate because of it pulling down on Uranus and Neptune, and they already knew that. So, in fact, I have a video of Robert Harrington saying those exact words on my paid cast of last week, May 11th. So you can go and see that. And anyway, but that's how everybody knew in the intel community, in the CIA, and that's what happened to Harrington. He was going to go public and tell everybody about this, and it was something that was then classified as top secret. Anyway, that's a very long story. I don't want to go into any more of that here, but listen to my DVD number 4, that's the downloadable DVD on my sales page. It's the university level astronomy, astrophysics, space science course, DVD number 4. And I go through this whole discussion there. But that's an answer to the listener's email question. How did you know the size of Hale-Bopp? And I had a clip of, in 1995, it was July 23rd, 1995, when Hale-Bopp was first discovered, NASA put a video up on the internet and then immediately took it down. And people that I knew had captured that video. From that video, and knowing where Hale-Bopp was, knowing the information, we knew the radius of Hale-Bopp because of the pictures that Chuck Schrammick took, and also the picture that Courtney Brown posted on the Art Bell page. So we knew the radius because of where the Hale-Bopp was at that time, and the period of the orbit of the companion of Hale-Bopp. And if you look today on Wikipedia or any of these disinformation sites, they still say that Hale-Bopp did not have a companion. But at the Canary Island conference put on by the European Space Agency, of which I was going to be a speaker, then got disinvited. And then NASA showed up there with Hal Weaver giving the very first talk, saying, and the title of his talk was, "The Companion of Hale-Bopp." So these people are just liars. Professional Hal Weaver. Well, if he ever has a gravestone, I'm going to hire somebody to go over and write on there, liar, L-I-A-R, Hal Weaver, because that's what he was, a professional astronomical liar. So anyway, another email from a listener. This was actually first seen by Carl Sagan, and he did make some discoveries. Carl, you know, if I would have gotten to know him, I would have probably thought he was a good guy. And he was an honest person, well-meaning, well-intentioned, very social-minded, very ecological-minded. But as one of my titles in my paid cast, I say, politically correct, scientifically wrong. That was Carl Sagan in a nutshell. But anyway, Carl discovered some flashes that were being seen by satellites in Earth's in satellite images of Earth. And so they still see these today in satellite images. They don't know what they are. And so anyway, that's one of the things I'm working on here. But clearly, if you look at my work relative to Earth, and also Lou Frank, I believe he's passed away now, a scientist from Iowa, he was a PhD in physics, discovered with the UV Explorer. He had a camera on there looking at the ultraviolet signatures of the Earth's upper atmosphere and could see the signatures of water up in the upper atmosphere. And they did not correspond to some kind of a microcomet coming in, because a microcomet would basically come in and vaporize, and that water would burrow much farther down before it vaporized. It would not be way up the upper layers. And so my theoretical work explained that also, amongst a thousand other things that it explains. But these are electrical connections, like kind of like if you can imagine a leech on a fish, if you can imagine that going out into outer space. And these are like little mini comets, electrically induced charges up in the Earth's upper atmosphere, and they draw in these streamers of material, primarily water, because that's the primarily hydrogen, oxygen are the primary abundant molecular species in our region of the solar system. Okay, so anyway, that is what they're seeing. And then in the upper atmosphere, these crystallize. And so all of a sudden, you get a blast of crystallized water up in the upper atmosphere. It reflects the sunlight, and only for a few minutes, and then they're gone, because the ice crystals drop down and they basically then melt, you know, and cascade down through the, you know, fall down through the atmosphere. Anyway, that's the explanation for the flashes that they've been observing for decades, and NASA scientists still don't understand those. By the way, my main science topic tonight, impact craters versus passing comets versus both. And I'm going to be talking about the Chicxulub crater in the Yucatan, one of the largest craters, and all the evidence does point to the fact that that was an impact at one time, but it was not the demise of the dinosaurs. Studies have been conducted after that showing that the dinosaurs even in that region did not die out, let alone the entire world. But anyway, I'm going to talk about impact craters causing mass extinctions versus passing comets, or both. Now, when you have big impact craters like that, remember that if a planet X type of object comes through the solar system, it kind of has this mini solar system. And whenever I say stuff like this, I know people are going to try and copy this and then paste it together with other shows that I have and then try and make it sound like James McCanney is saying Planet X is coming or something. By the way, Planet X, I talked about this last week on my paid cast, I believe, that the Nibiru of the Bible, of the Old Testament, of the wormwood, etc., literally was the nucleus of Halebop. And now that is crystal clear. And it also, I'm looking back, and I talked about this in the paid cast, that two cycles ago of Halebop was just about right, the right timing for the Noah's Great Flood. And the orbit of Halebop would have been pretty much correct for that. And so there's so many reasons that Halebop was a massively important comet. But the mass of Halebop was about 4 to 5 Earth masses. And we know that for many reasons. We know that because Harrington discovered it. He was looking for an object about that size. We know that it was influencing Uranus and Neptune, dropping down in their orbits. We knew how big that should be. So there's corroborating evidence. It's like a kind of like a mystery that you're trying to solve, and you find one piece of evidence. Well, okay, that's good. But now you have a second piece, a totally independent corroborating piece of evidence, which was what Harrington was looking for, and Halebop was what he discovered, and they called it Planet X. And now, of course, Halebop has left the solar system. It'll be back in 2600 years. And at the time, Harrington said, in around 1986, and this is why I put this clip also in my paid cast of last week of Robert Harrington. You can see he's a young guy. He's about 1986. And this was an interview that was filmed of him talking about the discovery of this object and their search for it. And it was under a NASA contract, search for Planet X. I mean, I have that posted on my webpage. And he was looking for an object 4 to 5 times the mass of Earth. And when he discovered it and they realized it was on literally a direct collision course with Earth, then that's when the other shoe dropped. That's when Harrington died suddenly, mysteriously. And you can see his picture, too. You can see him in 1986. He's a young guy. He's not like an old guy that's ready to die and fall off the train someplace. This guy was a young guy in 1991. He was not old by any stretch of the imagination. These astronomers live into the 90s. They got a cush job. You know, thank goodness for that, for them. That's great. But Harrington was probably the last real head of the Naval Observatory. Anyway, I don't want to go into that too much. But just a couple other topics here. May 13th, this past, was it Saturday? Or Friday, possibly. The 100th anniversary of the appearance at Fatima to the three children, the children of Fatima, where the Virgin Mary appeared to them and gave them three secrets ultimately, which were opened one at a time. And the one was held out, and there was a lot of speculation on that was related to the conversion of Russia. And when Russia was converted, then there would be the return of Christ and the end of the world and, you know, all kinds of things related to that. But I don't really have an opinion one way or the other on that. There are some people that do. But I did hear an interview somebody sent to me. It was with Jimmy Church on Coast to Coast AM. And it was the May 13th show, Coast to Coast AM. So you might want to listen to that. I thought it was interesting, although But the one thing I found interesting was that they were relating it to all of these things related to Russia. And it's kind of like this fear of Russia that's going on right now. If you can make Russia the boogeyman, it seems to be commensurate, kind of like everybody should fear Russia. And frankly, I have worked with Russians personally. I know a lot about their space program personally. I was invited back in the 90s. I was on Art Bell's show. We did a Christmas special every year, Art Bell and I. And Art was an atheist, but still we did these Christmas specials. And I remember I was sitting at a ski resort doing this interview, and Art was asking me, we got off on the interview was about the Russian space program. And we got off on the topic of did NASA go to the moon? And I brought it because I was saying that the Russian scientists were laughing at NASA, saying NASA never went to the moon. And they were just like, that was just a big joke. And so Art was a guy who threw people off his show for saying that people didn't go to the moon, that Apollo did not go to the moon. And so anyway, he was getting a little bit, oh, just a minute here. And so anyway, I talked my way through this and very rationally. And I was just pointing out that there's a lot of doubtful things about that little project. And let me just reiterate my official opinion of the alleged lunar landing of the Apollo astronauts between 69 and 76 is that it's an unproven scientific claim. And that's where it is. There's no proof. There's no second or third party, independent party scientific proof that NASA went to the moon. And the Russians have had spacecraft around the moon. They don't see anything. But anyway, I knew Russian scientists personally. So I dealt with these people. They're wonderful people. And they would laugh at how little they got paid. They got paid the equivalent of $75 a month. They lived in barrack-style housing, and they taught at the university. And, I mean, they were just, you know, that was Russia. I mean, that's the way it was. Russia has, at the time, a population that was less than Mexico. And a gross national product the size of Italy, if you can even imagine that. Russia is, you know, a poor country, but oddly enough, they have a military that matches ours. So it makes you wonder what we're paying for, all of this massive amount of money that going into military in Russia can match us with a GNP equivalent to that of Italy. Go put that in your pipe and smoke on it for a while, boys and girls. But this fear of Russia is simply unfounded. I mean, just, you know, the old Cold War, you know, where as a kid, we had to dive under our desks. Commonly, the sirens would go off and the kids would go under the desk thinking that the Russians were going to bomb us at any minute. You know, 50 years of this, we're still paying the bill for the military buildup during the Cold War. Anyway, don't get me started on that. But back to the appearance at Fatima. Yeah, I can remember as a kid listening to these as they opened up secret number one, and then we were all waiting for secret number two, and they opened it up, and then there was the secret number three was never really released in detail. We know more about it from other, I don't know if they're corroborating sources, but we really don't have a lot of information. But the question is, are these real? And there again, I believe it's up to a matter of faith. If you believe it, then you believe it. There's no argument about it. There's no debating it or anything like that. There's no discussion. That's your belief. And then there's people that go, oh, that, I don't believe that. I don't believe any of that. Well, you know, that's based on faith, too. That's their belief, their faith that it didn't happen. So anyway, just to make a note that Saturday, or whatever, May 13th, was the 100th anniversary of the, and then apparently October 13th, which is exactly 6 months later, and some people have made the case that that is the same day as the demise of the Knights Templars, oddly enough. Well, you know, something happened on that date. You might, you know, might be that date that Napoleon had a downfall, or they, you know, some comet came through the solar system. Anyway, whatever. I'm just making that comment. And by the way, somebody sent a listener email in and saying, oh, somebody said there's a comet in the solar system. Everybody should be aware. And I'm like, no, there's six comets in the solar system. And at any given time, you could probably count 6 to 10, sometimes more, comets in the solar system that are visible to minor equipment like binoculars, etc. So don't try and impress me that there's a comet in the solar system. There, if there has something related to Earth or other planets where they might get an electrical discharge alignment or something, I would make note of that. But there are comets in the solar system all the time, and mainly they're little and insignificant. Okay, on to this topic. Wow, this is a big one. The worldwide cyber attack that happened May 12th, that's still ongoing. But the software to do this, guess who developed it? The NSA. It was the NSA software and ransomware, it's called. In other words, this message apparently, and it's because people click on something that you're not supposed to click on. And hopefully the people out there are savvy enough to not be clicking on stuff that isn't known. And so anyway, they click on something, they get this malware, which, by the way, is absurd. All this, I worked in the computer industry much of my life. All of this could be prevented in a day, in a second. All of this could be stopped and controlled, but it's not. All of these, attacks that are like denial of use attacks, that was one of the ones that was going on here. But hundreds of countries affected, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of computers affected. And apparently what happens is a message pops up and says that if you don't pay us in 3 minutes, we're going to erase everything on your computer. Well, you know, I'll tell you something. People have been apparently paying this, worried about it, and so these people are making money. Believe me, I could have this taken care of overnight. Our Homeland Security, those people are so lame. They do not have a clue what's going on or how to fix this. The people in these offices are completely lame. But this could be cured overnight, and it never should even been it never should have happened in the first place. To allow something to come outside from outside your computer to come in and start controlling it and running your memory and erasing stuff. No, no, no. That is easily managed. But it's the NSA and the CIA demand that these software companies allow backdoors, and that's what happened with this particular Trojan. Was that it was developed by the NSA to get into your computer and cause problems for people that they targeted. And then the hackers got a hold of it. Word got out. Now every hacker on the planet's got access to this software. Man, these people in the government, they are so lame. WikiLeaks came out this morning, this past week, Julian Assange, and he said from what they can see in all of the emails that they've snarfed up from the CIA, that they're the most lame intelligence group on the planet. And that I would concur with. They got to spend less time buying and selling drugs and trafficking people and spend more time protecting the country. But the best thing for the CIA, just shut them down completely. And all of their corporate ownership of Google and all these other corporations that they own and have their fingers in, control of Elon Musk, you know, the list goes on and on. Just a quick commentary. Please, please, authors out there, no more books called XXX of the Gods. Oh my goodness. This started back with, what's his name? The Chariots of the God guy. A dude, Von Däniken. And since then, there have been hundreds of books called XXX, Something of the Gods. Please, no more books. I don't care who you are, how smart you think you are. There's people out there just starting to write books claiming that something from outer space affected Earth and man's history. Oh my goodness, people, please. And then they call it something of the gods. Please, no more. It's so disgusting. Oh my goodness. I'm going to have a dent in my forehead from hitting my forehead with my hand over all of this idiocy that's going on the planet today. Now, this is a funny story that came out this last week. Russia was, a while ago, demanded that NASA, there be an investigation on why NASA lost all of the documentation, all of the hardware manuals, all of the software manuals, all of the images, the footage, the video footage, or the at that time you would call it film. And remember that back in that era, there was film. They did not have electrical memories like we have today. And there was some, you know, digital photography and things like that, but it was in a rudimentary stage. But what the astronauts allegedly took were photos in film. And that was one of the questions. How could this film work at these super hot temperatures while they were in the sun, and then you turn into the shade and it drops down to like super, super cold? And how did the camera and this all function? And it turns out that the camera manufacturer couldn't quite explain this, but this is the funny thing. When queried, NASA said it erased by accident, or not by accident, to save space. Now, like they were erasing some medium that they needed the space on the memory. That was the way they said this. And first of all, none of this was in a digital format. And so erasing it to save space of a what would be the greatest scientific achievement in history, they erased it all. But the only problem is that it was on film. You don't erase film. You don't erase it. You know, it's there. It's a silver halide solution on a film. And once you develop it, it's there. You don't come in and erase it like an electronic memory. Oh, my goodness. These people are so lame. I just a Earth Changes update here. An Italian super volcano, this I believe is the biggest volcano in Italy, has not exploded in 500 years or more. It's called Campi Flegre, as the name of this Italian volcano, and they say this baby's ready to go. The last time it did, it covered the countryside with ash and, pyroclastic debris, the explosion. And so anyway, this is, it's just north of Naples, which is, of course, on the coastline. And there are 24 in my notes here, 24 craters involved with this volcano. So not good news for if you're living around Naples, Italy, right now. Not, this is not Naples, Florida, folks. Naples, Italy, the real Naples. And so not that Naples, Florida isn't real, but I'd say Naples, Italy was there a little bit before Naples, Florida. But I would be cautious about going to Naples and planning a vacation there in the next couple of weeks. Or this, you know, once these things start to become active, then, you know, they could go off at any moment. I hope that does not happen. The poor people in Italy have had earthquakes. They've had all kinds of natural disasters. They really don't need one of this magnitude. And this would affect, half a million people directly, many more people indirectly. Here's a science result that I found interesting, and it really was not very visible, not very well advertised, let's put it that way. Cassini mission at Saturn. And of course, the Cassini satellite is diving through the rings, and we're getting amazing, amazing photography of the ring systems. It's just utterly fantastic. But interestingly enough, when it dives down through the rings, or it gets close to the ring plane, they start getting cosmic rays. So these are local cosmic rays at Saturn. And this is very interesting because a lot of times this is in the shadow of Saturn. So these are not coming from the sun. These are localized cosmic rays. What's a cosmic ray? It's a high energy proton. So these are basically relativistic, so very close to the speed of light protons. And the way you see them is they graze through the receptor, the solid state receptor on the camera. And you see this on the SOHO satellite. I'm the one, in fact, that discovered there was back in the 1990s, there was I was sitting there watching the SOHO satellite, and there was a X-ray explosion on the sun. And you could see this in the data. And like seconds later, the cosmic rays hit the SOHO camera, just whoosh, just filled it up completely. And that meant that cosmic rays were coming from the sun. And that discovery, the people I was working with, that was called the Millennium Group, Earl Crockett and Ray and Gary Goodwin out there in California, notified NASA of this discovery. And they said, you know, McCanny discovered this. And the answer came back that they only allow data to be interpreted and discoveries to be given to the principal investigators at NASA. They didn't allow somebody else to discover something. These people, if I could write a history of all the lame stuff that's happened at NASA, yeah, just incredible. But the interesting part here is that the Cassini mission is seeing these around the ring plane of Saturn, which means Saturn is producing relativistic protons. And there's probably electrons mixed in there also, but it's the protons that cause these streaks on the cameras. And there would be other ways to detect the electrons. In fact, that's what you detect when you go up into the Van Allen belts around Earth. So just a very interesting observation. And of course, they treat it as if, okay, cosmic rays, you know. It was believed before that cosmic rays could only come from supernova. But here we have Saturn producing cosmic rays. And I talk about this a lot on my paid cast in previous weeks in the Cosmos series. So anyway, I'll be probably talking about that a little bit more in the upcoming week's the Cosmos series on the paid cast. And by the way, my paid cast for this week is in the ongoing series Tesla's Mind. And the topic, the theoretical explanation of coils and Schmidt triggers. Now, when you look at Tesla's work, and it's something that basically I rediscovered, published a lot, and I went a lot farther than what Tesla did, because with my work on the electrical nature of the solar system, etc., and where the electric fields came from, the protons supported capacitor, etc., around the sun and around Jupiter and Saturn, and the Earth's discharge of this capacitor, which creates supports our magnetic field, but it's the electrical discharge, it's the influx of electrons from the solar wind that penetrate through the barrier, and that creates the Van Allen belts. But Tesla did not know about any of this. He didn't have data, and if he had data, probably he would have discovered a lot of this. But at any rate, so not only did I rediscover what Tesla was doing, but I advanced it by a great deal, filling in the blanks that Tesla didn't know about. But in the core of literally all of what Tesla did, and if you look at his laboratory setup, of which there are records, there's photos, etc., and if you look at what his designs were, like the Wardenclyffe Tower, for example, was based on a Schmidt trigger. Well, what's a Schmidt trigger? Well, I'm not going to spend more time on this show, but listen to my paid cast for this week, the physics of Tesla coils, of coils, how they're built, and Schmidt triggers. So anyway, that's this week's paid cast, $3.95 a month, and I'm getting a lot of great reviews from this. So I would like to get more people enrolled in that. Just go to the webpage. There's a button there, or there's a line. Click on it to join the paid cast. And you can get, by the way, right now there's half price sale on the upgrades where you can get all of the previous episodes going back to last August for half price. The books, in fact, I didn't have time to upgrade the monthly premium this month. So you can get the basically buying at April rates all the way back to August at half price, the edition of ebooks, etc., for half price. Those are still on the sales page there. So go to the paid cast subscription subpage and you can sign up there using PayPal, $3.95 a month. Okay, on to the, oh, there's a couple other topics. These, I'm going to wait till next week again. I'm going to wait till next week. And I'm sorry I didn't get pictures posted for last week's show. So I got my work cut out for me this week. I got this week's show pictures. I got lots of pictures and explanations from last week's show. So I got to get those posted. I've just been buried in work here, so I apologize. A lot of good things going on. Very busy. And sometimes the webpage, you know, because I do it all myself. I don't hire this out. I don't have other people doing it. So if it doesn't get done, that's means I've been busy. Okay. On impact craters versus passing comets versus both. And this is related to mass extinctions on Earth. Now, we've had probably between 6 and 10, depending on how you look at these, mass extinctions. And that's where the majority of life on Earth dies out. I mean, it just comes in and labels the Earth. And the if you listen to Sagan or Neil deGrasse Tyson on the Cosmos series, their Cosmos series, they seem to have all these excuses like, well, there was carbon dioxide buildup and then the greenhouse effect and then the mountains jumped up and blew off and volcanoes all over the place and people died, you know, or animals died, dinosaurs died, whatever. But after they got done roasting Velikovsky, the ink was not even dry on the page yet. And Sagan was doing his Cosmos series. I mean, like I say, the ink wasn't even dry on the page when a number of scientists, including Nobel laureates, came out and said, hey, there's this layer of iridium. It's a element that typically is associated with asteroids and things like that from outer space around the world. And it was at the Cretaceous Paleogene extinction event layer. In other words, below there you found dinosaurs, above there you didn't find dinosaurs. So they're going, wow, something happened here. Where could that come from? And immediately, since you associate that with asteroids, there was the belief that the dinosaurs' extinction happened because of an asteroid impact with Earth. And so that was a lot to swallow for the astronomy community. In fact, to this day, anything that happened on Earth, ooh, an asteroid hit. You know, magnetic reversal, ooh, an asteroid hit. You know, mass extinction, ooh, an asteroid hit. So everything that the standard scientific community comes out with, ooh, an asteroid hit. So impact craters, if an asteroid hit, you know, an asteroid coming by or grazing the upper atmosphere isn't going to kill everybody off or all the animals, whatever, drive the Earth back to the cave ages or worse. So their only option is an impact. Well, if there's an impact, you need a crater. And you need a crater that's identifiable. So the crater is called the Chicxulub. That's Mayan. I'm not very good at Mayan. I'm a little better at Latin, a lot better at English, and I speak a little bit. I speak another foreign language, and then I'm not real good at Russian. I always had translators for the Russians, and it was a good thing because sometimes things get lost in the translation. But the crater is off of the Yucatan Peninsula, a place where I spent, frankly, a good deal of time in my youth. And maybe I'll post some pictures. I still got some pictures of when I was a kid roaming around southern Mexico and around the Caribbean or down at Tulum at on the Caribbean coast, now a big resort area. And I was one of the first people to use the road that went from what is now Cancun, which wasn't even there at the time. The little port was there at the time, and then driving down. This is 1971, if you want to put a date around 1970, 71 era. No, probably 71 in that era. But Yucatan Peninsula is a place that I crawled all over in the jungles, eventually went back and surveyed a lot of that area with surveying equipment, surveyed Chichen Itza, surveyed Uxmal and Tulum and these places, and went out into the jungle looking for markers, surveying markers that they used to build the cities, etc. And but anyway, this crater goes out into the Gulf of Mexico, in the Gulf of Campeche, which is right there, where there's a lot of fishing done. A lot of local fishermen go out there. In fact, one of my pictures is I'm sitting there with these guys who are making wooden boats by hand. And that's before my own personal venture into building wooden boats. But I'm sitting in this yard in Merida with these boat builders. And interesting photo. But anyway, the crater that is there really does look like a crater. So, I mean, it does look like a crater. And they talk about this being at the same time at this boundary, this geological boundary, which also is really at the same time as the dinosaur mass extinction. However, more recently, and you know, I mean, scientists are digging around. They're digging in the dirt. Some drilling has gone on there that shows compressed rock, which is indicative of a smashing meteorite, which would impart a tremendous amount of energy, break the rock deep in the ground, etc. And so, but when you look at the, for example, the gravitational anomaly map in the area, it looks like a crater. So it looks like the Earth got lambasted there, and it could have been as big as like 20 kilometers across. So, I mean, the Earth got labeled here, and I believe that. I believe that. But the more recent studies show that after the impact, even the small dinosaurs in that region did not die off. And it was not related with the iridium layer that is also in there. So the dinosaurs did not even locally die off, not the little ones even, let alone the big ones. And so the crater, and here's my estimate, I'll just stop. The estimate, I believe that the estimates that NASA makes, that the standard scientific community makes relative to asteroid collisions is very overrated. That you didn't have this firestorm that just burned everything on Earth and killed everything. No doubt, this is not something you'd want to be on Earth if one of these babies hits. I can tell you that. It would not be fun. It would end life as you know it. There would be no more corner gas station. But I still believe that in terms of animals just living in the jungle, here's a good example. When the big earthquake hit Haiti, the people living in the city had the problem. The people living out in the country were poor people. They lived on the land. They had their chickens. They got shaken. Probably their hut fell down. But in another day, they probably propped it up enough so they had the place to get out of the weather. Haiti doesn't have a lot of cold weather, so I mean, you don't need much. You need a roof to get out of the rain. Their crops were still growing. That didn't die off. Their chickens were still there. I mean, and so the maybe broken egg or two would be the worst thing that would happen if you were out in the country. And if you were a chicken, you would just like, well, by the next day, you'd already forgotten about it. Or some kind of other animal. So this is what it would be like if you were some kind of wild animal living on Earth. You think, holy cow, you know, something happened there. But the next day, you'd probably be back to normal. You know, maybe some trees fell down. Maybe some other things happened. But maybe some tidal waves, you know, killed some, you know, some regions. And there is evidence when that object hit that region in the Gulf of Mexico, just off the, in fact, that's what makes the Bay of Campeche, off of the Yucatan, just a little west of the Yucatan Peninsula in the Gulf of Mexico. This impact crater is what makes the bay. It's part of the bay, and the fishing areas out there, the structure is what gives it a good structure for fishing. But the tidal waves went up into Texas and into the southern states there. There's probably five southern states, what are now states of the United States, which were drastically affected when this baby hit. But if you were living in Kansas, if you were living in, I mean, we don't know what time of year this was, but if you were living, you know, up in Canada, if you were living, who knows, in any other place, then, you know, sure, you had a bad day, but life went on, and it did not kill off the entire world population of these animals. That did not even kill them off in the region where the impact was. Well, clearly, if you were underneath the impact or in that region, it wasn't a good day. But enough of them survived that it did not kill off the species. So this is getting back to the point. Impact craters versus passing comets versus both. Now, when a Planet X object comes into the solar system, and I'll just say right now, there's nothing planned that I'm aware of. I don't have any information. There's, okay, we got the whole entourage of goofy people out there making predictions again. They're coming out of the woodwork. The CIA crazy lady talks to aliens. They're coming out, you know, making Planet X predictions, but none of them have any validity because they don't have any real data that's verifiable. It's like NASA going to the moon. You need third-party verifiable information that I could look or somebody else could look, but they don't do that. They just say, oh, on such and such a date, Planet X will be here. You know, totally ludicrous. In my very first paid cast, or the second, one of the first two, was to tell you how to determine if a prediction like that is false or true. And it's a complicated topic, but there are some steps. It's like say you were a judge in a jury and you were trying to determine facts in a case. There's a certain set of procedures you go through in each case. Doesn't matter what the case is, what it's about, or whatever. There's certain things you go through, and you check them off in order. And when there's a Planet X claim, you usually don't have to get past the first one or two to discount it. And that's the case that's going on today. But typically, when a Planet X type object comes into the solar system, it has an entourage of objects with it. So that's where we get to the both part of the deal. And okay, say the Planet X object comes in the solar system, it has an entourage of objects with it. One of them labels Earth, you know, just a piece 20 kilometers wide. So that's a pretty small object. I mean, that would be like one of the small 27 moons of Saturn, for example. And, you know, slams into Earth. It doesn't kill everything off, but, you know, 6 months later, this object comes around the sun, has another encounter with Earth, and that's the thing that labels the dinosaurs. Where does the iridium come from? There are a number of scientists who believe there were two or three or more impacts that occurred around that same time. Some believe it was the same day. Some believe it was within a year or a couple years of the Gulf of Mexico, Yucatan impact. And so, there's a lot of controversy over that, but that's another possibility, that the iridium layer that actually covered the dinosaurs was another layer. But if you had a passing comet, now you have a whole different scenario. You could have the atmosphere sucked off of Earth. You could have the ocean levels change. You could have like with the Venus event, you could have a complete influx, a pollution event. And this depends on literally on the size of the passing object, because once they connect electrically, and I talk about this in my work, it's the size, it's the surface gravity of the object that dominates who pulls what from who on a passing object. So if the passing object has a surface gravity larger than Earth, then Earth loses. And that would certainly ruin your day for any living animal on Earth. And if Earth were larger, as in the Venus event, where Earth was larger than Venus, we had a tremendous pollution event. Okay, so the end result is that the question is, where did the iridium come from? It could have come from another impact that occurred slightly later, whether it was months or years or whatever, slightly after. But that could have occurred at the same time when this large object came by and did a lot of other action at a distance. It's a term that I use when I describe comets and how they affect Earth or other planets without crashing into them. And so this is the issue. And this is, you know, the thing you have to look at is that mountains are built by the gravitational wave. We know from the Maya, we know from the Colburn, they all say the same thing when they talk about what literally was the Venus event, the Moses event, the Colburn event, one of the Colburn events, because they talk about multiple instances of large comets affecting Earth and the Earthlings. I mean, that's what the Colburn starts out talking about. By the way, you can go to my webpage, the Colburn, now available in e-format from the Chaldean group in New Zealand. So go to their webpage, a link on my, just scroll down on my homepage, jmccsci.com, and you'll find that link, and it's like $15. I mean, you go get one of these. And by the way, if you bought one from Amazon, it's called Colburn Bible, send it back. It's a piece of garbage. It's plagiarized and changed. It's not the Colburn. That's not what you want to see. Get the real Colburn. You can find a link on my webpage. But a lot of things happened back in history, in the history of man, and most of these were related with comets. So going back to the age of the dinosaurs and other events in Earth's history, the mass extinctions of the dinosaurs, we can actually find an impact crater that's remotely related to the mass extinction. The other ones were not so fortunate. We cannot find impact craters. But the issue there is that passing comets can cause mass extinctions. We already know that. We saw that with the mastodons, the saber-toothed tiger, that animal, that class of animals, that whole Holocene period, or the mass extinction, was caused by a large comet passing by, never crashed into Earth. There's no craters related to that. And we even find diamonds, and I talk about this, I've talked about this in my show, the diamonds that are impacted into the upper side of the mastodons that are buried up in the mudslides in Alaska, for example, and were preserved there because of the cold. And so where do the microdiamonds come from? They're made in the electron beam with carbon in the vicinity of the comet and the nose side of the comet, on the sunward side of the comet. And I've talked about that on my show before. So all of this fits together. And of course, if you think comets are dirty snowballs and no bigger than your house, then none of this makes any sense at all. So the only thing they can come up with is something crashing into Earth. But the reality is the vast number of mass extinctions that have occurred on Earth, there's no crater. There's no asteroid. There's no crashing asteroid at all. So comets versus impact craters, or both. And unless scientists start looking at these, looking at the evidence as you would in a courtroom, looking at all of the evidence, not just like like the FBI's been doing, looking at a little bit of the evidence, but not everything, you know, pretending that some of the evidence isn't there, that's what's going on in standard science. you're not going to find the evidence, then the corroborating evidence. You know, if you're just looking for one crater and you go, that's it, end of story, and then somebody comes along and proves that that wasn't the thing, that was not the thing that caused your mass extinction, other things happen, the change in atmosphere, change in the water content, change in the sea levels, change in probably all kinds of other dominant species, molecular species in the atmosphere, oxygen, nitrogen, carbon dioxide, etc., that those are the kind of things you look at. And let's look at some little fact here. On Earth, we have salt mines up in the Colorado Rocky Mountains. We have them in the Himalayas. We have them underground, deep underground. And the salt content is very different than the salt content that we have today in the ocean. In fact, the blood in your body has about the same, pretty much exactly the same composition as seawater. So that exists today, but the Himalayan salt is very different. The other point, you can look on the internet and see all the impact craters on Earth, and some of them occurred and there was no mass extinction associated with them. So, like I say, mass extinctions and impacting comets or asteroids hitting Earth, I don't see that as the cause of mass extinctions. There's more going on here. Certainly, like I say, it would ruin your day. would not be a good day if an asteroid hit next to you. But the estimate that there was this firestorm that covers Earth and just blasts everything completely, no, I don't see that. Here's what's going to happen. As it impacts, and you see that crater, most of the violence is going to go straight up. And, of course, that's going to cause some problems going out sideways, but it's really overestimated what's going on. The vast majority of that energy is going to go straight up, and probably not good day if you're a bird flying over either. But the overall worldwide effect is simply not there. I just believe the computer models, and the problem is we probably don't want to learn this by experience, but the computer models are, I believe, like many computer models, are to get a desired effect. Let's keep modeling this until we get the whole Earth destroyed, and then we'll put that out to the public. Then NASA gets funding. That's what's going on. Anyway, I hope that gives you a little bit of insight into impact craters versus passing comets versus both relative to mass extinctions. But I would say that the passing comets dominate the mass extinction market. Just a couple seconds here. My sale is still on the page. I have not had time to take down the sale where there's 10% off all the major water filter products. Remember my new whole house, the high flow rate water filters, the MR, the multi-rounds. And these are for house, for farms, for ranches, for horses, whatever you need, an industry, that you need a real water filter system that removes literally everything, lets the minerals go through. Same technology as my GF filters for the smaller kitchen models, etc. But go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, and join the paid cast. Let your kids listen to it, etc. This is a lot of information you're not going to find anyplace else. All on my webpage. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.